My Sankirtan days were again sort of abruptly concluded when a temple president left. He just disappeared. This is still in 1975, 31 years ago, and blooping, as it was called at that time, was something that was rare, although it was getting more frequent or less rare, but it was still an extraordinary thing to hear that senior devotees would leave Krishna consciousness. In this case, it wasn't that our temple president left Krishna consciousness, it's just that between the pressures of his family life as well as the pressures of developing our new big temple, he got overwhelmed. And a few months later, I found him at one of our congregation members' homes. It was out on a farm some distance away from Montreal. Anyway, but in the absence of the temple president, someone had to fill in his space, and I found our GBC asking me to do that service. Many things have transpired over the last 30 years which have really whittled away the respect given to senior devotees in our movement, so that only Diksha Gurus, and even then from their own disciples, really receive quote-unquote respect, or at least the kind of respect that they're due. In the early days, Brahmanas were considered to be senior devotees, just someone who had second initiation. The temple president, we respected our temple president without necessarily all the formalities, but we actually had the on reverence form, probably on the level of which devotees have for their spiritual masters at the present time. And GBC, GBC was Srila Prabhupada's right-hand man, so he was next thing to the representative of God. And as such, he was also the representative of God. This culture of respect didn't come of its own accord. It came because Srila Prabhupada put it there. And even though Srila Prabhupada was aware of discrepancies in the behavior of his leaders, still he encouraged devotees to respect them. For instance, in 1975, maybe earlier at Bhaktivedanta Manor, when the temple president wasn't chanting his rounds and spending his money on buying crystal chandeliers and so on, when devotees came to complain that the temple president wasn't chanting his rounds, Srila Prabhupada's reply to devotees was, don't criticize your temple president. Or that may have been the GBC. In any case, the message was the same. Same was the case when the temple president of Detroit wasn't chanting his rounds, and he was replaced for that. Sounds like a pretty reasonable thing, but Srila Prabhupada considered that service rendered has to be respected, and therefore he insisted that that temple president be reinstated in his position and just be encouraged to attend the morning program and chant rounds. So Srila Prabhupada himself was the one who gave great respect to his leaders, his representatives. And because Srila Prabhupada did that, therefore it came all the way down the line. And devotees were really quite respectful to each other as well. This is in stark contrast with the present situation where respect is not given where it's due. Devotees don't deal with each other nicely. Authority figures are often guilty by dint of being in a position, whether it be a sannyasi, guru, temple president, GBC. Anyway, when my temple president left, I f- found myself in a position of a temple president. And it wasn't something I was trained for or even prepared for, and it wasn't something I wanted to do because, once again, I wasn't on book distribution. But I encouraged the devotees to do sankirtan, sometimes to excess, like locking the temple doors before, so no one could get in up until 6 o'clock in the evening. We were really extreme. Not extreme, we were really dedicated. And that dedication sometimes led us to perform austerities we otherwise wouldn't do. I remember very clearly in the spring of 1975, when the weather started to warm up. You have to understand, in Montreal, it gets really, really cold. By really cold, it's minus 20, minus 30, minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit without any difficulty. And when it's zero Fahrenheit, then we think, wow, that's a nice day today. I'm talking about the winter time. And my experience of this is that even though we did try to stay inside doing sankirtan, but in the end result we would get thrown out enough so that more or less all throughout the winter we were frozen. And I remember one day standing in the warm shower after sankirtan and starting to feel that my body was actually thawing out. And when I went out again in the nice spring sunshine, it remained thawed. It didn't freeze up again. In other words, we were just perpetually cold all throughout the winter. However, another change took place, and this is the second part of my experiences. And that was that in 1975 I was sent to Winnipeg. And conversely, the temple president of Winnipeg, Nandikeshwara, who was a devotee of my age, but he had experience with running a temple, whereas I was new at it, was brought to be the temple president of Montreal, and I went to be the temple president of Winnipeg. Winnipeg is in the middle of the Canadian prairies, which means that there's east and west, there's 1,000-1,500 miles of nothing but wheat land. It gets extremely cold there in the winter. It went down to as much as minus 70. And the temple was a small temple. There was about, I think altogether, 10 devotees when I went there. And some devotees came with me from Montreal and some went back. And over that year, we brought it up to about 16 devotees or maybe even more. Maybe it even peaked at 20. Ritad Bhajan Maharaj was one of the devotees who joined. And there were some other nice devotees who joined there as well. I met my friend Dharma Prana, who was a real sankirtan rock and who's still present as a full-time devotee in Toronto Temple. And the benefit of Winnipeg Temple being so small was that I was able to go out on sankirtan. I would go out on Saturdays, and actually I tried to go out every day. Unfortunately, if I remember right, I was the only brahmana. And I tried to convince my GBC that a first initiated devotee could wake up the deities in the afternoon, and which was at 4 o'clock. And if they were able to do that, then I would be able to do the morning doing president business, and then in the afternoon go out on sankirtan. No, he didn't approve of that. And even when I tried to get an accountant to do our bookkeeping, he insisted, no, you should learn how to do accounting. It'll come in good for you in the future. He was right. But still, I maintained the spirit or mood of sankirtan, so our whole temple did nothing else but sankirtan. Everybody went out. I also did some preaching programs. I would go out on Saturdays, then I got some other devotees initiated. And I also inherited a candle business when I went there. The previous temple president was engaging some devotees to do candles. One of the Matajis so engaged was Sangha, Devi Dasi, who's in the UK now. And the candle business was valuable for me from one point of view, that it showed me what Srila Prabhupada says, that this book distribution is our only business. I tried to make it work locally. It was generated a certain degree of income, but when we really tried to do big and go to Toronto and sell the candles over there on the street, it became, that was a complete disaster. It just didn't work at all. And once again, this just reaffirmed for me that the best thing, the most important thing, was to do book distribution. I remember 1975, Christmas marathon in Winnipeg, and that was a short marathon, whether it maybe was 5 days or 7 days, something like that. And I remember the wonderful experience of standing there on the street. There wasn't any place you could go inside in Winnipeg. Standing out on the street and my hands just being so cold and frozen. Even right now, I don't have the normal feeling within my fingers from the frostbite. But we would just laugh. And we're feeling so much ecstasy that it didn't matter, and you had to have one free hand, because otherwise how can you take money and give change? It doesn't work with big mittens on or big gloves on. But we distributed books, and I received one of the two letters which I received from Srila Prabhupada, and it was to do with the initiation of the devotees. But I'd written to Srila Prabhupada informing him that this was one of the coldest places in the world, and Prabhupada wrote back, I don't have the letter on hand, but it's in folio, that he was very happy that Krishna consciousness is being spread in such a place, and just encouraged myself and the devotees to continue on. My probably most important experience in Winnipeg was that of deity worship, because aside from being temple president, I became the head pujari, and I dressed big Gornitai deities. These were paper mache. There was either 3 or 6 sets of these paper mache deities that Govinda Dasi made, and they were very beautiful. I worshipped those deities. I dressed them because I was the only Brahmana until some others received Brahman initiation. And I had some other spiritual experiences dressing Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and appreciating how they were non-different in their deity form. Sometimes I felt great ecstasy just being overwhelmed by the opportunity of doing this kind of intimate service. And I personally came to realize how important it was for me to worship the Lord. And 30 years to this day, I'm still continuing to worship deities, and I've never really stopped since that time. Although Bhagavad Vidhi is the main track which we follow, but the other track which gives us balance to be able to preach and chant is Pancha Trikavidhi, the path of deity worship. And in Winnipeg, I realized that in order to enable devotees to learn the culture of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, in order for them to have a more personal relationship with Krishna, in order for them to be purified at heart from the unwanted things which they brought them to Krishna consciousness in order to give them strength and inspiration for their preaching in Sankirtan, to actually relate to the person who they are going out and doing Sankirtan for. Deity worship was such an important thing. However, I didn't consider Winnipeg to be such a strategically important place. And once having sent some devotees out on traveling Sankirtan, they went to St. Paul's, Minneapolis, which are twin cities, more or less south, but in the United States. And I proposed to my GBC, who was Satsup Maharaj at that time, that we move the entire temple, deities and all, to Minneapolis. He approved. And so Winnipeg, which was at that time quite a small place, not a place where 10 Sankirtan devotees could go out every day. We constantly had to travel to other places, and wasn't a place where, at least as I envisioned, the temple should grow and become big. If I was to do it now, I would have trained up someone else to be the president, keep that as a small preaching center, develop the congregation, and move on in that way. But this was 30 years ago. I had much less experience, and so things transpired in a different way. In order to develop Minneapolis, we then moved to Chicago. In Chicago, Vishwakarma, my ex-temple president, my old temple president, was the temple president there. He welcomed all of our devotees. They were able to go out on Sank book distribution at O'Hare Airport, and we started to finance the development of Minneapolis. This would be the beginning of my accepting and experiencing what real anxiety was on behalf of Krishna. I would say up till now, this first 3 years of my contact with the Krishna consciousness movement, everything was just peachy keen. I was either so fixed and tunnel-visioned in my activities, or truly the circumstances were so sort of favorable and unconfrontational that I never really had any quote-unquote problems. I don't mean problems in my personal spiritual life, but problems with my service. I never lost any sleep over my service, and everything seemed to go very easily. But now I would start to see that there are obstacles to spreading Krishna consciousness. There are people who are against Krishna consciousness. And when we come face to face with these people and obstacles and try to surmount the problems that they cause, that causes anxiety. Just as Srila Prabhupada gives the example, Mother Yashoda is always in anxiety that Krishna will be harmed by the demons. So in the spring of 1976, deities and everything, we moved to Chicago Temple, put the deities on Gornitai's altar. There were only small Gornitai there. And I started to go back and forth to Minneapolis to look for a suitable temple. And the significance of this looking and ultimately finding a temple is that it was the first project which I started. Obviously, I didn't start. I'm doing things on Srila Prabhupada's behalf. Krishna is the one who gives the strength, intelligence to do anything. But I took the initiative to inaugurate a project, whereas previous to this, I was just participating or maintaining an existing project. Now, our research into Minneapolis was very superficial. I should have done much better research, And had I even done a little research, I would have known that Minneapolis was in the Bible Belt. Bible Belt means that the born-again Christians were very forceful in their preaching, and they were very forceful in defending their turf from any type of quote-unquote new religious movements. And we were one who was just coming in. And that confrontation with other Christian churches, particularly one group of folks, would be or come to be a real source of anxiety for me in protecting and ensuring the health and prosperity of Krishna consciousness movement in a newly founded temple in Minneapolis. But we'll continue with that tomorrow.